Hello and welcome to another episode of the Side by Side ATC podcast. I'm your host, Tom Haynes. And this week, I wanted to answer the question, who are you and why do you do this? So it'll be kind of a more in-depth explanation from the intro episode that we started with. And so, who am I? Well, Tom Haynes. I am, about to turn 61. I started, let's start at the beginning. I was born in Oklahoma City, believe it or not. My family moved around, maybe not a lot, for not being military, but we ended up spending most of our time in Texas, in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and as a kid, I got interested in playing soccer when I was about 7 years old. Roped my dad into coaching, and we became a soccer family. My sister ended up playing. My mom ended up refereeing. My dad was a coach, referee, commissioner of league for a while. He ended up doing some state-level refereeing, which meant he was doing some college games. There wasn't much semi-pro around at the time. Not a whole lot of pro around at the time either. But so I grew up a soccer brat. Played other sports, but none of them officially. Wasn't on any teams. Did play a little bit of basketball in junior high, simply because I could shoot free throws. That's what got me into on the basketball team. But we moved before I actually got to play any games, so that was actually probably for the better. But continued playing soccer through high school. Played on several select teams in high school and played for my high school team. And then went to college in Jackson, Mississippi to play soccer. They were a NAIA school at the time. They're now NCAA Division III. But NAIA school at the time, the year before I went there, they finished third in the nation at their at the national tournament. And so when I got there, we were a top 20 team. And I went from being the stud player in high school and on my club teams to riding the bench. And it was a difficult transition for me in college. And then, you know, everything that goes along with being in college. Now, the college I went to, I did find out what it was like to be a football player at just about every other school. Because soccer was the only sport during the fall, and so we were the big men on campus, especially having finished third in the nation the year before. And so everyone knew us. It was a small campus to begin with, but everyone knew us. People would come out, watch practices, and most of the school, at least the people that lived on campus, showed up at the games. But I learned fairly quickly in college that I was asked to help coach some teams. And I had been, growing up, I had been asked to help coach teams from time to time and come to practices and demonstrate what the skills look like. But I was also asked by some people in college to help coach a team. And so I got into coaching and found out fairly quickly that coaching was a heck of a lot more fun than playing. Now, I did have one claim to fame as a player. I was fairly good at juggling a soccer ball. Now, juggling a soccer ball is, of course, very different than juggling balls with your hands or you know, bowling pins or, you know, heaven forbid, knives or anything like that with your hands. Juggling a soccer ball is basically keeping a soccer ball in the air using everything but your hands and arms. And my claim to fame was that I kept a soccer ball in the air without dropping it once for over an hour and a half. Basically the length of one soccer game that I was watching that my dad got roped into helping referee. And the team that I was playing on, we were at the wrong field, and so there were two other teams there. I actually knew a player on one of the teams, hadn't seen him in, what, 5 or 6 years, and we'd played together as younger kids. And so I just grabbed a soccer ball, started juggling. Went through the whole first half, went through halftime, and dropped it about 10 minutes from the end of the game, and became an instant celebrity with that team and with my friend's teammates. It's not that special. It's a, you know, kind of a really minor claim to fame. The world record at the soon after that was about 88,000 touches over 8 hours. So I wasn't close to having a world record. Who knows? I may have had the state record for a while. And my dad, who was my greatest fan, was very proud of the fact that his son had done something like that. So anyway, got to college. Like I said, didn't play a whole lot in college. The college game never slowed down for me, which helped me to become a coach. Started coaching in college. Started helping my club coach from Dallas. Had actually moved to the Jackson area, and so he asked me to help, you know, with tryouts, and he became a very well-respected coach in the Jackson area. And so got into coaching. After college, was asked by a friend of my dad's, actually, to help coach his team. And so that became what I wanted to do. The only thing was that my girlfriend at the time, who is now my wife, and we started dating in college. Her brother had actually played on the soccer team. He was older than both of us. And so I knew her brother before she came to campus. And I was the first person on campus that she met. And we started dating not long after that. But it took a while for us to get married. She wasn't particularly happy with coaching as a career, and I wasn't making a whole lot of effort into doing something else. I had not graduated from college, stuck around for 3 years, played on the team for 2 years, and then decided that I wasn't going to be able to afford college, and so stopped going. My wife did graduate, and I hung around the Jackson area long enough to see her graduate, and then we both moved back to Dallas. And like I said, I got into coaching. It was a select team that from Arlington, Texas, that was playing in Dallas, and we did fairly well in the kind of the second division of select soccer in Dallas. And then we did very well in the entry tournament into the first division, and so we got to play in the first division of select soccer. They were, I think, 13-year-olds at the time. And then I started looking for something to supplement my income. The income of a soccer coach at the time wasn't great. And so I actually got a job for the other coach of the team. He owned a government contracting company. And so I was working for him and started my work for government contractors and for the government. And while I was working for him and coaching, I found an ad that said make $50,000 a year, no experience necessary. And back in 1988, $50,000 a year was big money. And so I looked into it, found out what it was, found out it was air traffic control, and knew that my girlfriend at the time would not like it because of the stress. I called her up, explained to her what I wanted to do, what it was, and she promptly said, without hesitation, I think you'd be great at that. And I went, oh, well, now I got to take the test and continue looking into it. I took the test, did very well on the entrance test, and at the time they were still reeling from the strike in 81, so they were putting about 300 students a month through the academy. The pass rate wasn't great. It was about 40%. It was all non-radar. Terminal and en route were all together. Everyone doing the same screen is what they called it at the time, because that's pretty much what it was. And they had a 40% pass rate. And then based on your scores, that you would go to the center or a tower. My input, there were only three center positions. Everybody else in the Southwest region went to towers. The input before mine, everyone who passed went to the center. It was probably good I didn't get in a month ahead of time, because the washout rate, or the pass rate anyway, at the center was another 40%. So 60% were not making it through the screen. Of those that went to the center, 60% were not making it through the center. Now, as long as you got a certain way through the training at the center, if you washed out after that, they would send you to a tower. And one of the gentlemen that I ended up working at Forest Center with later, and I'm now working in a tower with, he was one of those who washed out of his training. I think it was the radar training at Forest Center. And so he went and worked in a tower for years until he got back to Forest Center. So that is how I came to join the FAA. Now, once at the academy, you know, book learning, things like that, that was never very difficult for me. I was a nerd, very much so. I loved to read. I loved to write. Very much a nerd, even though I was an athlete. In high school, I was the president of the chess club. In college, I was president of Phi Beta Lambda, the business club on campus. And, you know, I did kind of well in school. School actually bored me a little bit, and so I got to the point where I didn't do as well in school. But the classes that I enjoyed, I did very well in. And so you could call me a nerd. And so when I got to the academy, we had the classroom part first and took some tests that did count. And I did very well on those tests. And then we went into the non-radar lab. And I did so well on the tests that I thought, oh man, this is going to be a breeze, you know. My girlfriend was right. I'm going to be really good at this. And so I didn't practice at all, and was doing okay in the labs, but not great, obviously. And then we came up on our first graded problem, and I proceeded to get a 45 or 49, one of the two. And I had never gotten a score that low on anything that I tried to do in my life. And I came out of that really ticked off. So much so that the A lead for the class was standing there as we were starting our next run. And he could tell I was upset. And he said, what's wrong? I said, well, you know, I got a 45. The two guys down here that happen to be pilots, they got 90s on their first run. And he looked at me and without hesitation said, you will pass, they will not. And I looked up at him like he was a crazy old man, which, you know, he probably was. There was probably a tinge of craziness there. I mean, after all, he was an instructor in Oklahoma City. And we're all a bit crazy to be up there. But he was right. Now, how was he right? I started practicing. I found out that being a controller mattered to me. It mattered to me whether I passed or didn't pass. And as I started practicing with my classmates more and more, we all got better. And I started running some mostly perfect problems in the practice problems. And then we get to our final graded. I think we had four or five in a row that were just graded, graded, graded. And I did okay. I wasn't tearing it up, but I did okay. And I needed, oh, maybe 60 or 70 on the final test to pass. And here again, it's a multiple choice test. And I do very well on multiple choice tests. And I did very well on that final test and passed. And like I said, our input only had three center slots, so I ended up getting a tower slot. And I ended up picking Brownsville, Texas, simply because there was another class in 8 ahead of me who had also taken Brownsville. There were two people going to Brownsville, so I decided, well, if I'm going to start this new thing, I might as well start somewhere with someone else who is just starting. And so I spent another month in Oklahoma City going through what they called Tower Follow-On. It was actually, I think, about 5 weeks. And for those of you who are at the academy right now, I was at the academy from the beginning of November through the end of February. We graduated either on my birthday or right around my birthday in January. And then we stayed for 5 weeks until the end of February. And I remember leaving Oklahoma City as it was snowing. And I stopped in Denton, Texas, where my parents lived, stayed overnight there, and then made the, you know, about 12-hour drive. The speed limits at the time were 55, not 70. And so it was about a 12-hour drive down to the very southern tip of Texas. The guy that was in my class, he was renting a house, and so I stayed with him for about a week while I found a place to live, and we started our careers at Brownsville, Texas Airport. And so I was at Brownsville for about 4.5 years. So I got there March so of 89, so it was almost five and a half years, because we got contracted out in October of 94. But training at Brownsville didn't take very long. Ground control was not bad. The airport was not busy. We had no flight school. We were averaging maybe 10 operations an hour. 10 operations an hour. And it was a non-radar approach control when I got there. And so we were running approach control services to two controlled airports, Brownsville and Harlingen. And we were still averaging 10 operations an hour. So you can imagine just how slow the tower was. It was level one at the time, probably what would be a level four now. But of course, it has been contracted out. And so I stayed there until it did get contracted out. I bid out on several bids, but was never picked up. I had kind of ticked off some management, not in the building, not in my building, but further up.
And so I stayed at Brownsville until 94 when
it got contracted out. And that allowed me to move to Dallas Love Tower and move to the Dallas area where my wife's family, I got married while in Brownsville. My wife's family was in the Dallas area. My family was in the Denton area and then moved back to Arlington where I had grown up. And so that started a career at Love Tower. Now, Love was a level 4 at the time, back when it was levels 1 through 5. And so I went to Love. We had a couple of people that went to George Bush. It was Intercontinental Airport at the time in Houston. Now it's George Bush Intercontinental Airport. My training at Love went much faster than their training at Intercontinental. And so it took me, I got there in October of 94. I was certified through the tower and on the radar. It was a limited radar in the cab. And so I certified on the radar and became a CPC again in March of 95. So it took me about 5 months to certify. And at the time, that was the quickest anyone had certified at Love. And that has since been beaten. But then I started working a level 4 tower. No touch and goes at Love. I still think they don't do any touch and goes. Just clear to land, clear for takeoff. And I never thought I would leave. I had my first daughter was born while I was at Love Tower. And Love had a baby boom that year. I think there were 5 babies born that year. The year my oldest was born. And my daughter was the last of the 5. So we got quite a lot of hand-me-downs from people in the tower, which was great. And I never thought I would leave. I enjoyed working at Love. I enjoyed the people I was working with. And when my daughter was born, she was born with a birth defect. Not one that was life-threatening, but one that certainly turned our world upside down. We were not expecting it. We did not know ahead of time. And so the first 3 months, we were at Children's Hospital where her doctors were. We were there twice a week for 3 months, and then she had her first surgery at 3 months old. And so that was a trying time for us. And it wasn't a really expensive birth defect, but you know, doctors being doctors. So I thought that I needed to make more money. So I put in for Oakland Center. Oakland Center had a continuously open bid. I put in for it. They proceeded to cancel the bid after I put in for it and reopened it. And part of the bid paperwork said that the previous bidder didn't have to reapply. They still had my bid. I'm like, okay. And then soon after that, a bid became open for Forest Center, DFW Tracon, DFW Tower. And so I was like, oh, cool. I put in for all 3. And I got selected for Forest Center. And it was funny. There were 2 of us from Love that got selected in that bid. And the people that I worked with at Love, they were hilarious. They were like, oh, you'll love the center. It is so laid back. They're so laid back over there. Okay, that sounds good. I'm a laid back kind of guy. And so I go to Fort Worth Center. Oh, my word. Laid back? No,
That is not the word I would describe the people that I saw at Fort Worth Center. And I will tell you, when I got there, there were three of us that got there at the same time. Two from Fort Worth Meacham Airport and one from, and then me from Love. The other one from Love decided not to go until later. So he got there about 3 months after we did. And there was a guy that transferred in from Oakland Center. And they had him in the Dyson, the simulation room, and had him running problems. And so we got to go down and watch, since we weren't doing a whole lot the first few weeks we were there. We were learning the map and stuff like that, but that was about it. And so we went down and watched him work one of the busiest sectors, definitely at Fort Worth Center, and probably one of the more difficult ones in the nation. You worked DFW arrivals, DFW departures, Houston Tracon arrivals, Houston Tracon departures going to and from Chicago. So you had three of the top 10 airports that you were handling arrivals and departures in one tiny little sector. And I watched him work, and he had so many airplanes, and he was vectoring, climbing, descending, doing all this. And I thought, there is no way in the world that I can do that. And, you know, it comes with training, and it comes with practice, and it comes with being there day after day, and learning in steps. If you had sat me down to run that same scenario that he ran, no, there's no way I could have done it. I couldn't have figured out a way to do it. I would have had so many deals, so many, I probably would have had them actually hit, you know, on the radar if I had tried to do that. And thankfully, that was not my job at the time. My job was not to do that. My job was to learn how to do that. And so over the next few years, I learned how to do that. I got through the D sides fairly quickly. I got through my first two R sides fairly quickly. And then started with the arrival sectors. And the high altitude arrival sector, DCOT High, was one of the busiest in the facility. And it took me a while. And then I started having some health issues, some back issues, and started missing a lot of work. And I will tell you, the only way to get through training quickly is to be there every day. Because if you miss days, then you have to get back into it. And back into it, get it? But that's my dad joke for the day. But I did eventually get through it. And got through the low altitude arrival sector, which also took some time. I'm a type of person, I don't like training. I really don't. I don't like being the trainee. I like training people. And I found out at all three facilities that I did enjoy training people. And I was fairly good at it. And so that began. I got to Fort Worth Center in January, technically December of 97, but that's officially December of 97. I actually stepped foot in the building to start training for good January of 98. And then my youngest daughter was born in 98. And soon after that, my mother-in-law got her breast cancer came back. And so for the 3 months after my youngest was born, my wife was at the hospital every day with her mom, and I was pretty much at home with the kids. I burned through all the leave that I had accumulated over my years in the FAA, plus some.
I had to actually get an advance of sick leave to plan and attend her funeral. And so that was the beginning of my training at Forest Center. And, you know, it didn't start in a great way, and it took a while, but I did certify, and then I did end up training people at Forest Center. I will say this, and I need to shout out to my trainers in Brownsville who gave me the head start that I needed, my trainers at Love who were fantastic, and my trainers at Forest Center, my first two, Don, Randy, were amazing. Fortunately for me, all my trainers were phraseology fanatics. And so I learned very early how to say things, how to say it right, and how to not even think about how to say it right. I just said it. And that is what your goal as a student, CTI, student at the academy, controller in the military, controller getting into the FAA. Phraseology is, I have a podcast titled Phraseology is King, and it is. If you know how to say it, then you don't have to think about it. You just say it. Become so fluent in ATC that you can't say it the wrong way. Become so fluent that when you do say it the wrong way, you just cringe, but you know there's a reason why. The pilot doesn't understand the correct way to say it, so you have to say it a different way. It happens. And so you have to be able to say it, you have to be able to write it, you have to be able to understand it. And if you do that, the pilots know what to expect from you. And as my first trainer told me, they will follow you into a mountain if you sound like you know what you're doing. And I've been blessed with people listening to me, people listening to me train, people listening to me work. And they have always told me, Tom, you sound like an air traffic controller. And I'm like, I don't know how. I don't know how I sound that way, but I'll take it. And I went with it. And so that was the beginning of a career at Fort Worth Center. I mentioned that I have two daughters. They are now both in their 20s and both amazing young ladies. They both graduated from college. They took after their mom. They graduated in 4 years, which they took after their mom. It would have taken me 6 or 7 if I had stayed, simply because I really had no idea what I wanted to do when I went to college. And I changed my major 3 times, so it showed. But so that is who I was in the agency, in the FAA. I retired in 2015, so in January, that'll be 10 years. I cannot believe that I've been retired for 10 years. It took me a year and a half to find my way to Oklahoma City. So August 1st of 2016, I became an instructor at the academy in Oklahoma City. And for the first year, I would drive on either Sunday or Monday, depending on what my schedule was. I would drive up to Oklahoma City, I would stay the week, and then on Friday I would drive home. And my family was still in the Dallas area. My youngest daughter was a high school senior, so we didn't want to move her. We wanted her to graduate, and she did. And we wanted her to graduate from the school that she was going to. And so we made that happen. And I became a radar lab instructor, which is what you do first. And then they asked for volunteers to become a non-radar instructor. And even though I'd only been there for 3 months, I volunteered. And so I ended up in a class that was learning how to be a non-radar instructor. And I got to tell you, that was an interesting class. We went through the, oh gosh, is it 4 weeks? Something like that, of classroom time that you guys get at the academy for non-radar. We went through that in a week. And then you have 27 scenarios that you go through, the practice scenarios. And that takes you, you pretty much do three a day. So it takes you 2 weeks, maybe a little bit longer. And we went through those in a week. And I got to tell you, after some of those scenarios, my brain hurt. But I became a non-radar instructor and thoroughly enjoying life as an instructor, especially since a little bit later that year, my wife was able to join me in Oklahoma City. And so we started being full-time in Oklahoma City. And I have relatives in Oklahoma City. I had done some growing up there, but I hadn't actually lived there in probably 40 years. So it was definitely a change. And then about 6 months after becoming a non-radar instructor, they asked for volunteers to become A-leads and classroom instructors. And I volunteered. And so that became, or began, my experience as a classroom instructor. Totally different. You spend a lot of time with one class, at least we did at the time, because they would assign a lead and an A lead. They're so short of leads and A leads right now that they do a lot of rotating. And so it's a little bit different now, but I thoroughly enjoyed being with one class and getting to know the young people in the class, and found out that I was, here again, fairly good at being an A-lead. And so did that for another couple of years. So, and then 2020 comes along. And of course, COVID hits, shuts down the academy for an extended time. And then when we started doing Zoom classes, I was still the A-lead for a class, the same class that I had when they shut the academy down. And we started doing Zoom classes. And then they talked about getting back to the academy and splitting the classes in two. And so that's when I volunteered to take half the class and become the lead instructor. And so I was a lead instructor for about the last year that I was at the academy. And there again, it's just a different level of experience that that is required to be the lead instructor. And ended up leaving the academy in 2021, towards the end of 2021, for various reasons that I won't really go into. And I took a job in Valdosta, Georgia, of all places. Had to find that on the map, at a company called Advanced ATC, a school for air traffic controllers. And I was not necessarily working at the school. I was working at the tower in Valdosta, where the students would come and learn how to work in a tower and eventually get their CTOs, their control tower operator cards. And so that was my next experience with training, with coaching. and did that for about 6 months. It was a huge pay cut from Oklahoma City. And so it wasn't going to work financially for us. And both my daughters were still in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And so I became aware that the federal contract tower companies were no longer requiring people to get the vaccination for COVID. And so I put in to work with the contract tower company and got called almost immediately. The initial call that I got was about a couple of the instructors who had also put in with that company, put into to work. And so I talked with the man about them, and then he got to talking about what I wanted and where I wanted to be. And I pretty much told him, you know, any place that's closer to Dallas. And then he called me back 2 days later, asked me if I would be interested in working Dallas Executive Airport on the south side of Dallas. And I couldn't believe it. And I looked at my wife, told him to hold on a second. I looked at her and I whispered, "Dallas Executive." And she almost screamed. And I told the man, yes, I was interested. And so they had to put it in for an internal bid. He let me know by the end of the week. That was Monday, I think, that he told me. He let me know on Friday that the job was mine if I wanted. So I had to tell my boss, I'd tell the company I worked for that, you know, I was going to be around for about 3-4 weeks and then be heading to Dallas. And so that was March and April of 2022. And so April of next year will be 3 years that I've been working in Dallas as a tower controller at an airport that averages maybe 150, 200 operations a day, but we can get as busy as 500, 600 a day. We have 2 flight schools at the airport. We have helicopters that come over from an adjacent airport, an airport close by, and they want to do work at our airport instead of their home airport. And so we can get busy. We don't stay busy all the time. And then, of course, if weather hits, there is no traffic. But that is a much more in-depth version of who this Tom Hanks guy is. I've done just about everything there is to do. As far as air traffic, the only thing I haven't done is worked at TRACON or in a real approach control. I did go up to Oklahoma City for RTF, and that was a lot of fun, and did very well at RTF. And so that's who I am. Why do I do this? My time at the academy, it was great, but it also, you know, those days where classes were evaluating, you knew that some people were going to be going home without a job, because at the time there were no 100% classes. And that did not sit well with me. Even as just a lab instructor, you get to see students multiple times and you bond with them. And then when I got in the classroom, oh my, you bond with them. And then you come up to eval day and you know that some of them are going to be going home. And when I got to be an A lead, I made sure when I found out that someone had failed I made sure that I went up and saw them before they left. And those moments were never easy. It was easy to celebrate with the students that had passed. It was never easy to say goodbye to students who had not. And in my last class especially, there was a young gentleman who was doing very, very well.
Extremely well. And then something happened the last week. And he ended up not passing. And no one knew why. And unfortunately, the FAA and the company that I worked for were fairly adamant about not being around students outside of the classroom and outside of the lab. And really not seeing them that much in the building outside of the classroom. It's kind of hard not to, but you know, they didn't want us eating meals, taking breaks together, things like that. And almost from the beginning of my time at the academy, there were some instructors that I would talk to and talk with about coming up with a tutoring program to help students get through the academy. The only problem was we would have to have quit our jobs with the contractor in order to make that happen. And so for the most part, we all just kind of shook our heads and put that on our wish list and went about doing as much as we could for the students who were there while they were there. Well, now I'm in a position where I'm not at the academy. Now I'm in a position where I don't work for the FAA. I work for a contractor, but the contractor has nothing to do with the academy. And so I finally just, I thought about how can I help? How can I, because even at Valdosta, even at Advanced ATC, I saw people that came through who had failed the academy and were at Advanced ATC to try and get a CTO and try and stay in air traffic. And it still hurts. It hurts to know that there are students in Oklahoma City who are not going to pass. And it hurts because I'm not doing anything about it. And so this podcast started as a way to, I don't know, maybe answer some questions, get some feedback, give some encouragement to students who are at the academy. Excuse me. And, you know, maybe start doing something about it. And so that is why I do this. That is why this is not where it's going to stop. I have plans, and you'll be listening to this right before New Year's. And the new year, hopefully, will bring about a lot of change. And hopefully, I can start some changes at the academy. And start some changes in this career field that is air traffic control. And maybe, just maybe, help some of you who are at the academy, some of you who are at CTI schools, some of you who are at Advanced ATC, some of you who are in the military looking to work in the FAA. Because the FAA is a different world when it comes to air traffic than the military is. But I'm here on this podcast to help you. That's my goal. And what I want to do for the coming year,
We'll probably get started in the middle of January. So just a heads up, it's actually going to happen. We're going to go forward. And we're going to see if we can come up with a way to help provide coaching, provide mentorship, provide someone you can talk to, someone you can ask questions of. Now, I'm going to leave most of the details to the instructors at the academy. They are very good at what they do. And they are up to date on all the changes that the FAA loves to make at the academy. And I will be getting up to date with that. But that's why it's called Side-by-Side ATC. We want to come, and I want to come alongside you, walk alongside you while you're at the academy, help you when I can, and give you someone to lean on when you need it, someone that you can talk to about issues that have nothing to do with air traffic, but they're on your mind and they weigh you down. And so that's why I do this. And that's what we're trying to accomplish. My goal is just to give everybody at the academy a better chance. Not a guaranteed chance, but a better chance of either passing or improving your score to the point where you get the facility that you really, truly want to go to. That's my goal. That's my mission. And that is why I do what I do. So, thank you for listening to this extra long version of the podcast. And I hope everyone had a wonderful Christmas. Hopefully you got to spend it with family. I know when I was at the academy during the holidays, I didn't really get to see my family. And so it was a different holiday season. But hopefully you've been able to spend time with family. I got to see my wonderful daughters, my mom, who is still in this area. And we're going to go see my wife's family next week. So hope you had a wonderful Christmas. Hope you have a great New Year's. If you're in Oklahoma City, be careful. The police will be out and they will be looking for your license plates. And so they will know you're from out of state. They will know that more than likely you are at the academy. And so they love to pull you guys over. So be careful. It's not worth it. So if you need anything, let me know. You can email me, Tom Haynes at sidebysideatc.com. Know that something is coming. It's on the way. And it'll probably be within 2 or 3 weeks. 3 weeks at most, hopefully. You'll start seeing it. And then we'll get this whole thing up and running, in addition to the podcast. So, again, thank you so much for listening. Hope you had a wonderful Christmas and have a happy new year, and may 2025 see you realize your dream of becoming an air traffic controller and your dream of becoming a great air traffic controller. And thank you again for listening. Until next week, goodbye.